On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome into Vern's post-game show.
Went to his left, picks it up, spins, jumps, throws to first. In time, he got him. Wow!
Here's Royals insider Josh Vernier.
All right, good evening. You ever drink an energy drink just because you're excited? That's where I'm at for this show tonight. I'm excited to talk some Royals baseball. We have a lot of Royals baseball to talk about. A pair of games in the books. Royals split the doubleheader on the south side of Chicago, and now they head home. I want to head to the phone lines as soon as possible. So let me give you that phone number, 913-586-7610. That's 913-586-7610. Heading home with the best run differential in Major League Baseball. Heading home with a 12-7 record. Baltimore coming to town for 3. Toronto in town for 4. I know they didn't sweep Chicago. I had a tough time fully embracing that idea. I know how bad they are. I've watched them now 7 times in, 3 weeks? No, it's certainly not an enjoyable team to watch. Some of these young pitchers they're throwing out there pique my interest. But like I said on Friday when I was on with Carrington, go 500. I understand we wanted to laugh at the Mets and we wanted to make fun of the Chicago White Sox. It's still a big leaguer. It's still one of the best 800 baseball players on the planet. And you have to throw it across the plate. You got to give them a chance, right? That's the beautiful thing about baseball. So I respect another big league team. Go 500 on the road, and that's exactly what they did. So I'm happy. And if I can be completely honest with you, I'm going to stay very happy so long as these starting pitchers continue to do what they've done over the first 19 games. If this continues, guys, you're not going to hear me blow my top very often, if at all. If the starting pitching continues to give the team a chance every single night, I can't sweat one-run losses. I'm sorry. I understand the opponent is putrid. I understand the Royals offensively had opportunities in Game 2. But if your pitching is going to be this good, like Q has been preaching, like Vinny has been parroting, turn the page. Move on. This Royals rotation, now through 19 games, has tossed 113 innings. That's the most in Major League Baseball. They have an ERA as a unit of 2.39. That's the second best in baseball. Michael Wacha just threw the 12th quality start of the season in 19 games. It's the most in Major League Baseball. Their whip, 1.04. Meaning, they're allowing the fewest base runners in all of Major League Baseball. Michael Wacha just turned in the 10th start by a Royals pitcher of at least 6 innings with 2 runs or fewer allowed. 10 times in 19 games, your starting pitcher has not only given you a chance to win, he's put you in position where you should win. So even though this was a game that it seems as if the pitching did its job and gave you a chance and you should have won, I can't sweat the fact that you didn't. Because Alec Marsh, Cole Reagans, Seth Lugo await. 913-586-7610 is our phone number. Again, that's 913-586-7610. Let's start off in Waldo. Derek, you're hitting leadoff this evening. Go ahead, buddy.
Hey, Vern, appreciate you having me on.
Yes, sir.
Couldn't agree more, man. Can't believe the starting pitching just keeps giving us a chance game in and game out. A little rough six-game stretch, I guess, as far as batting outside of a couple games. But between, you know, buddies here in Kansas City, the optimism, I think, with what that starting rotation gives us is at an all-time high. And we're going into the game this weekend, getting a big group and going Saturday night. So can't wait to be there. Appreciate you having me on, Vern.
Yeah, thank you very much for the phone call. Way to get us started. There's only 19 qualified pitchers in all of Major League Baseball that have an ERA under 2. 19. Less than one a team, right? Of those 19, three of them are on the Royals. Seth Lugo has the fifth best ERA in the sport. Brady Singer, 11th. Cole Reagans, 18th. They're the only team that has three representatives in that group of 19. It's amazing to watch. Base running, best in the game. Defense, best in the game. When you dive into the metrics, the Royals have one of the three best defensive units in the sport, and they are the best base running team in the game. I understand a not even a base running error, but a caught stealing may have been the difference in this one. A 2-1 loss in game two of a day-night double, of a traditional doubleheader. Royals win game one behind Salvador Perez, doing what we expected him to do, right? I told you on the On Deck show, whenever Salvi misses time, when he returns, he normally does damage. And he did just that, hitting the 251st home run of his terrific career, now one away from Joe Torre for 11th all-time among catchers in baseball history. Salvi, Singer, and Hunter Renfro get big in Game 1, leading the Royals to a 4-2 win. Game 2, though, it's a 2-1 loss to the White Sox. And yeah, Dairon Blanco coming in to pinch run for Vinny Pasquantino. Top of the 8th inning with two outs and Salvi at the dish. Third pitch of the at-bat, Blanco goes and he's gunned out thanks to a terrific tag from Nicky Lopez. It was the Royals' last best chance in Game 2. They had others. MJ Melendez had a couple of big opportunities. One time he was robbed by Robbie Grossman on a great catch in left field. That was in the first inning with two on and two out. Then in the fourth inning with two on and two outs, he swings through a curveball from Tanner Banks. 913-586-7610 is our phone number. That's 913-586-7610. 7-6-10. Yeah, Blanco comes in the eighth inning of a one-run game. Everyone in the ballpark, well, whoever was in the ballpark knew that Blanco was going to go. Blanco has been perfect this season. Nothing about baseball is perfect, and now Dairon Blanco is no longer perfect as he's thrown out at second base, and the Royals go down in the ninth inning, ultimately falling 2-1 to the White Sox. Let's go to Cole, who's out in Manhattan. Cole, you're on 610 Sports Radio. Go ahead.
Hey, Vern. So I've got a couple of things. And, you know, first off, I don't think you can complain about a 3-3 road trip. You go back and you look at some of those games against the Mets. I think maybe that's a little bit disappointing. Go back to that Sunday game. Very easily could have won that game. You know, I look at what happened this week. And, you know, as far as the whole entire series goes with the White Sox, I could only imagine, you know, I understand you're a big leaguer, but the energy that you get from every night from going out there and playing a big league game, there was absolutely zero energy in that ballpark. I mean, it just looked abysmal, and I think Ryan might have said it on TV. It was like, these guys are going to have their own energy. It kind of felt like towards the end of the game, both teams just kind of dragged along, and, you know, that's probably partly why the pitching was probably better for both teams. But as far as this game goes, I'm curious to know your opinion. I was having this conversation with somebody. I know you were just talking about Blanco, but I kind of thought that move was curious. You know, you go back and you look at that Baltimore series. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe they pinch ran for Pasquantino. It might have been in the seventh inning, and Nick Lofton maybe had an error at first base. They ended up losing that game. But I was a little surprised that they did it with two outs simply because anytime Salvador Perez comes up to the dish, he is in scoring position. And so I understood why they put Blanco in that bag.
Vinny wouldn't have been in scoring position at first base with Salvi at the dish, right? I know you're talking about a home run, but you need to be – I don't think it's fair to expect a home run. You want to score that there in the top of the eighth inning. You're down to your final four outs. I like the move. I want to know that if Salvi gaps one, we're putting that tying run on the board. I can't guarantee that with Vinny Pasquantino on first base. With Dairon Blanco, most certainly. Also with Dairon Blanco, I feel as if I have a 95% chance of him finding his way to second base in the first few pitches to Salvi. No, I didn't find it curious whatsoever. You also take a look at that situation, right? With Vinny on first, Salvi at the dish. Who's coming up after? MJ Melendez, who prior to that at-bat in the ninth inning was 0 for his last 20 with 8 strikeouts. I'm with Q. This is our opportunity. Salvi is our big dog. Salvi has 17 RBI in the first 18 games he's played in. He's top 10 right now in Major League Baseball as far as stakes are concerned. So no, that, in my opinion, I'm with Q. That was the opportunity. Put Blanco in there, send him, and if Salvi can run into one, this game's tied. And now we're going to the big dogs in the bullpen, and you feel pretty comfortable. Speaking of the big dogs in the bullpen, we saw John Schreiber. We saw James MacArthur extend their scoreless streaks in Game 1. Schreiber now up to 8 2/3 scoreless this season. James MacArthur, 6 straight scoreless outings, 9 strikeouts in that stretch, 9 strikeouts in 6 2/3 innings, and he's collected 4 saves across that 6-game scoreless streak. 913-586-7610. We go to Connor in Blue Springs. You're on 610 Sports Radio. Go ahead.
Hey, Josh. How are you doing?
Great. How are you?
Doing well. First, I just want to say I've had a lot of fun watching the boys this year. It's been a pretty special start. Pitching's been nuts. We've had some offensive breakout games. But I just had a question for you. I was just going to ask you, do you think this offense is consistent enough for us to be a playoff team? I know we don't have to be elite because our pitching's been out of this world, but I just want to see if you think that we have the consistency to sustain success through the season with the offense.
Sure. Appreciate the phone call, Connor. Thank you very much. That opens up a phone line for you, 913-586-7610. A few things. And to also go back to what we heard from Cole. He mentioned how there were a few games against the Mets that we could have easily won. You've been in every single game this season, right? All 19. The starting pitcher has given you a chance to win every single game. You've lost 7 games in which we could go back and say, well, that's it right there. Right, Chris Stratton had his game. Will Smith had a couple games where you laid it at his feet. The offense, I think, has a trio of games you lay it at their feet. This game today, you could put at the feet of the offense. So every game they could have, quote, easily won because the starting pitching gives them a chance to win every single game. Also, one more thing that Cole pointed out. I'll get right to what you were asking about, Connor. But Cole mentioned the energy in the ballpark. Barely 10,000 paid to see this game today, this doubleheader on the south side of Chicago. You know, maybe a third of that actually stuck around for Game 2. You know, I wonder how much Michael Garcia would benefit from... I've mentioned this before. I think Michael Garcia is going to really benefit from getting back to Kauffman Stadium and hopefully playing in front of a raucous crowd on Friday night and Saturday night and hopefully Sunday afternoon. But yeah, I think there are some players that are, well, showmen, entertainers. They feed off of that energy of people watching, of that pressure, of the cameras and the spotlight. To me, Michael's one of those guys. Now, to be a pro, as we've witnessed over the past decade with Salvador Perez, you have to find that motivation within. Salvi does that better than anybody that's come through these parts in years. Maybe ever. So I'm not giving Mike Hell a pass. He's now 0 for his last 23 with 7 strikeouts and only 2 walks in that stretch. Not giving him a pass. Q did give him the night off. Garrett Hampson serving as the leadoff hitter. 1 for 4 for Hampson with a strikeout and an infield single. But no, not trying to give Mike Hell a pass, but I'm expecting Mike Hell to break out this weekend against the Baltimore Orioles. Now, Connor, is this offense consistent enough to go to the postseason? As this team is currently constructed, no doubt about it. If the rotation can maintain, maybe not the gaudy numbers, but being one of the 5 best in the game. Right now, the only rotation that I would give an edge or even have a conversation is superior to the Royals. I understand what Boston's numbers are, and it's Philly to me and Seattle. I think the Dodgers and Blue Jays could start the conversation, but if the Royals can stay in that mix of those 5, of being one of the 5 best rotations in the sports, to go along with the best defense and the best base running, yeah. I mean, what you're asking for, if you get that type of pitching, defense, and base running, what you're asking for is basically the same thing that we used to ask of the Royals pitching staff back in the glory days. Instead of asking the bullpen to lead the way like you did back then, now you're asking the rotation to lead the way. The way you leaned on that bullpen in 13, 14, 15, and 16, that's how much you need to lean on this rotation. That's how good they need to be. Furthermore, this offense has a ball player in Bobby Witt Jr. that's better than anybody on that championship team. Salvador Perez is as clutch, as unfazed by the big moment as anybody on that championship team in 2015. Vinny Pasquantino, to me, is as quality a hitter as anybody on that championship team. Can they stay healthy? That's the question to me. Can they stay healthy? Of the 26 guys that were on that opening day roster. Now, Michael Massey's going to be back more than likely Friday. Massey just hit another home run down in Omaha. He is on a roll. I mean, tonight, he hit a home run. Tonight's Wednesday the 17th. Yes, he hit one Tuesday as well. Massey's rolling right now. Okay, throw Massey in there. Of those 27 guys, how many of them can make it for 6 months? Honestly, that's where for as much as I'm trying to focus on maintaining through May, the only reason that remains my mantra is because I understand the battle of attrition the game of baseball in this 162-game march through the summer often becomes. I'm just leery of getting too comfortable, right? We're seeing pitchers and hitters go down around the league left and right, nightly. Big names going down. So I'm not trying to upset the baseball gods, but as this team is currently constructed, they have what sustains. I've said it so many times. Starting pitching, defense, and base running, that can mask a lot of offensive woes. Because when you have a quality defense that's making all the routine plays and the occasional spectacular plays, when you have a starting rotation that's keeping the game close, young hitters and even veteran hitters all start to identify, even though I think a lot of this goes back to spring training, they start to identify, man, if we just do these little things, we're going to win. Because these games are always close. They're always 1-run, 2-run margins. So if we can take that extra 90 feet, if we can sacrifice, it makes that pass the baton, the keep the line moving mentality easier to adopt in a sport where it is very individual. You're the only guy in that batter's box. You're the only guy on that mound. It's your career. It's your way. You're going to take care of your family, maybe for generations. It's a very individual sport. But the only way to truly have individual success is by playing the team game. I think that lesson is learned quickest when you find yourself thrust in a division chase, when every game is close and every game is meaningful. So yes, to answer your question, yes, I think the offense is consistent enough so long as the pitching, defense, and base running remains top-notch. Now, you lose an arm or two out of this rotation, and then my answer would be no, I need Mikel and MJ to pick it up. I need this offense to be five deep with guys that can beat you with one swing, guys that can put you on their back. I need Mikel, MJ, Vinny, Salvi, Bobby to be stars, all-star talents. But if you have Lugo with a 1.05 ERA, Singer with a 1.54 ERA, Cole Reagans with a 1.93 ERA, and Michael Wacha, following today's outing, lowering his ERA to 3.75. If you have that, no, this is more than enough, in my opinion. 913-586-7610, Scott in Kansas City. You're next up on the postgame show. Go ahead.
Hey, Vern. Talked to you a bunch of times. How are you doing, bud?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, man.
Nice to hear from you.
I feel really positive on this year, man. Our pitching is solid.
Yeah.
I know the first couple times I talked to you, we laughed back and forth about the keep the line moving, and we were, you know, I made the mistake, not the mistake, but made the deal on how it really worked. If you don't have nine guys that can hit 40 home runs a year, where you keep the line moving and everyone does their part and all of that.
Yeah.
I think our starting pitching is amazing. I think our relief pitching is solid. The one concern I do have is, and the one thing that's always kind of held the Royals back when they're kind of on the edge is, we'll have two or three guys trending up, and then we'll have like three guys that are automatic outs in the lineup that kind of balance that out. Now, I know it's baseball. Not everyone's hitting 500 all the time, but it's the point where you almost want to give MJ a couple days off because I saw he's swinging at stuff in the dirt right now. He's swinging at stuff. He's trying too hard. Other than that, I think Matt Q is the perfect manager for me. I will get off the air, but when I moved to Colorado and lived for a few years, Scherholz was the old GM for the Royals, and I saw the way he kind of developed Atlanta, and it was athletes, speed, defense, and pitching. We follow that path. We are good, bud, and I'm going to go off the air. You are amazing, and I think you do an amazing job.
Hey, very nice of you, Scott. I appreciate it. Phone lines are open for you, 913-586-7610. Speaking of Friday's game, I mentioned the boys flying back home to open up a seven-game homestand. Before we get out of here tonight, we will give you a chance to win two tickets to see Alec Marsh and Dean Kramer go at it Friday night at Kauffman Stadium. That's a 6:40 first pitch. I have the on-deck show beginning at 5:30. Scott, I'm with you. And I made mention of it earlier today, hours ago, on the On Deck show. It was in reference to Michael Massey, who J.J. Piccolo earlier today sat down with Joel Goldberg and, you know, implied that Michael Massey will likely return on Friday, or at least that's the way the front office was leaning prior to today's doubleheader. They were leaning towards bringing Massey back to open up this series against a very talented infield, a very talented team in the Baltimore Orioles. I mentioned Michael Massey homered tonight as the Storm Chasers are in action out in Nashville. A two-run shot for Massey, who has, six doubles and a home run in six games on this rehab assignment. He's hitting .414 with an OPS north of 1,200. And I made mention of that because, you know, should he have come back for this today? And I said on the On Deck show, I don't think so. I don't think second base is killing you. Because the numbers that you're getting, the offensive output that you're receiving from second base is in line with what you're getting from third base. And actually a little bit better than what you're getting from center field. So that can't continue. So my thought was either Michael step it up or Michael step on the gas pedal and we'll see you in Kansas City. Now, Michael Garcia in the opener goes 0-for-4, 3 ground balls and a fly out to the opposite field. I told you what Michael Massey's doing. Now, Nick Lofton had a nice nightcap, went 2-for-4. And you know, he's hitting 276 this season, but all 8 hits from Nick Lofton are singles. 8 singles, 5 walks, a 276 batting average. Adam Frazier's only hitting .179. He is hitting .363 with runners in scoring position. He came through big in game 1, a 2-out single to center to put the Royals on the board and give them a 1-0 lead there in the second inning. They would go on to win 4-2 in Game 1, drop Game 2 by a final score of 2-1. So they split the doubleheader. But when you look at that second base position, someone's got to go. And you're not going to pay Adam Frazier $4.5 million, $5 million to get out of here. I understand Nick Lofton was the only guy to have multiple hits in Game 2. It's the only guy that scored a run for you in Game 2. But I don't... Where else would you go? JJ, Piccolo, Matt Quatrero have been very forthright throughout, saying when Michael Massey is ready, the second base job is his. He's not going to lose that job due to injury. So if Massey's back tomorrow, he's standing in against Dean Kramer. He's your second baseman. Adam Frazier goes to the bench. And Nick Lofton heads to Omaha. You can't have, in my opinion, it's very difficult to have 3 holes in the lineup. 3 defensive positions where you're punting on offense. I'm fine doing that in center field. I agreed. I think we all agreed to that when the season started. Izzy, play gold glove defense and... You know, lay down the occasional sacrifice bunt, advance the runner. Just let the scoreboard dictate your approach at the dish. I'm fine doing that in center. You know, Michael Garcia's not going anywhere. So I understand you just have to grin and bear it with him at third base. So second base, you're getting an upgrade in Michael Massey. Hopefully that offsets the slumping MJ Melendez. To your point, what's difficult is the 2 slumping bats right now on this team are 2 of the first 5 hitters to come to the dish. That's the issue with these 2. So if you get Massey back, I think that cleans up the issue at second base and helps you cover up the slumping bats of Michael Garcia and MJ Melendez. Given them multiple days off, I don't see a reason to do that. I want Garcia right back in there on Friday night at third base. He's been through this before. I want MJ right back in there coming up on Friday night. MJ's already had success. He already knows, in my opinion, what works for him. How he's gotten out of it before. Think about how bad MJ was in the first half last season. But since that All-Star break, it's been an OPS north of .850. He's going through a rough patch. I believe he'll lock it back into gear real soon. Thanks for the phone call. Phone lines are open for you. 913-586-7610. That's 913-586-7610. Royals splits. A traditional doubleheader on the south side of Chicago. They win game 1, 4-2 behind Brady Singer in a clutch Hall of Fame home run from Salvador Perez. But they drop game 2. Despite a quality start from Michael Wacha, 2-1 the final score in Game 2. My game notes are brought to you by Jay's South Lanto. Be in the know and call Jay's South Lanto. Quick timeout. We'll get right back to your thoughts, and we'll hear from the manager after this.
You're listening to Burns Post Game Show on your home for Royals baseball, 610 Sports Radio, and the Odyssey app.
Fastball hit high and deep into left center field. Away, back, and into the bleachers.
Ryan Lefevre on the call, Salvador Perez. Top of the eighth inning with his team down one. And Bobby Witt Jr. on second base. Salvi belts a first pitch fastball, a 97 mile per hour piece of cheese right down the middle from Michael Kopech. Salvi doesn't miss those. His fifth of the year, travels 431 feet. Puts the Royals ahead 3-2. Hunter Renfro would blast one 432 feet in the ninth inning. And that's how the Royals won game one by a final score of 4-2. Welcome back. Royals dropped game two, by the way, of this doubleheader. They split the traditional doubleheader with the White Sox, winning game one 4-2, dropping the nightcap by a final score of 2-1. That home run there from Salvador Perez, number 251 of his Royals Hall of Fame career. He's now 66 behind George Brett for the franchise record. And, of course, don't sleep on what Bobby Witt Jr. did prior to that home run. Again, Royals trailed 2-1, top of the eighth inning. Bobby comes to the dish with one out and nobody on. Hits what Ryan Lefevre called a routine ground ball for 99% of big leaguers. Hits a routine ground ball to the third baseman. A third baseman, mind you, playing the hot corner for the first time in his big league career. He charges the routine ground ball off of the bat of Bobby Witt Jr., but Bobby's busted it down the line to the tune of 31.1 feet per second. 30 is elite. Bobby broke off a 31.1 feet per second sprint down the first baseline. He beats it out. He then steals second base. And a few pitches later, Salvi crushed it over the left field wall to give the Royals the win. 4-2. They dropped the finale, but the record is 12-7, second best in the division, third best in the American League, and the run differential remains the best in Major League Baseball. Phone lines are open for you, 913-586-7610. Let's go to Brian in Lee Summit. Brian, you're on the postgame show. Go ahead.
Hey, Josh, longtime listener. It's been a long time since I called in. Just want to thank you for all your years of sticking with the Royals, even through the terrible times. And your analysis is always very good, and you've always had a level head. And so I, among others, appreciate that very much. So I'll start with that.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for sticking with me, because it hasn't always been pretty on this show.
Okay, that's fair. That's true of everybody. But, you know, I wanted to just maybe have your thoughts on a little broader topic of, you know, when they banned the shift.
Yeah.
Before they banned the shift, when the analytics and the shift were at full force, it seemed like winning with speed and defense and guys that could spray it around just was not a viable strategy. You just basically needed people that could muscle it up over and go for 30 a year. And that was the only way teams were scoring, you know. So how has that rule change, in your opinion, made, you know, this type of team, like what the Royals want to be, which is like a speed, defense, athletic team, put pressure on, you know, how does that make this kind of possible to maybe have success with this type of roster build where it wasn't like that before? And maybe some thoughts on that would
sure.
be cool.
Sure. Yeah. Well, pertaining to the shift, it has put an emphasis on being even more athletic up the middle. When it comes to shortstop and second base, you know, no longer are you given that edge, you know, especially a second baseman, right? The lefty comes up, we would see that exaggerated shift, and the shortstop would be on the second base side, so... Now, a second baseman, you got to show off your range, right? You have to be able to cover a lot wider margin than you had previously. Michael Massey put up Gold Glove caliber numbers last season, so a team that already ranks as one of the best in the sport defensively is only going to get better with the addition of Michael Massey. Now, as far as speed on the base paths, that's obviously benefiting everyone with the larger bags, the fact that you can't throw over more than twice. And that's what Rob Manfred wanted. He wanted more action on the base paths. He wanted the athleticism of these world-class athletes to be more evident to the novice. And the Royals have always put an emphasis on athlete over slugger. I would think forever. Right? Going back to Scherholz and Cedric Talis, it's always been about getting the athlete. Now you have the occasional Balboni and, you know, John Mayberry and true sluggers. But you think about the great Royals teams, to me, George Brett, but it normally begins with pitching and defense. Pitching, defense, and speed. Right? From Willie Wilson to Gerard Dyson to Bobby Witt Jr. So anytime athleticism is promoted, highlighted, I think it's going to benefit the Kansas City Royals. But let's not get anything confused. Everything always starts with pitching. 1985, 2014, 2015, 2016. Anytime you're having a good time as a Royals fan, it's because of the pitching. 913-586-7610. Text line's open for you as well, 913-586-7610. Yeah, I want to say that the shift has been beneficial for Vinny Pasquantino, like it has been for a majority of lefty hitters, but you know, Vinny was one of the guys that I actually think would beat the shift or had the ability to beat the shift on a consistent basis. Salvador Perez, I know he's benefiting from the elimination of the shift. But yeah, I think it mainly goes back to athleticism. You know, if you're a ground ball pitcher, it helps you out. So, you know, Seth Lugo's happy about it. Appreciate the phone call, Brian. Let's go to the text line, 913-586-7610. That's 913-586-7610. From the 816, who gets sent down when Massey comes up? Well, we just mentioned this. I think it's going to be Nick Lofton. I really don't know what the other option would be. A big welcome back to Captain Salvador Perez coming from Rally Mantis. From the 816, Vern, why isn't Adam Frazier on his way out? He's wasting a roster spot. Well, to me, Frazier's your backup plan in case what we're seeing from Michael Massey right now in Omaha doesn't translate to the big leagues. Adam Frazier, in my opinion, was brought to Kansas City to be an insurance plan for Michael Massey at second and MJ Melendez in left. To me, in spring training, he was breathing down the neck of both of them. Not that any of them or either of them are afraid of a competition. Not that either one of them were sulking about it. All good teammates, brought the best out of everyone. You saw how well MJ got off to the start of the season. I mentioned how well Massey's swinging it right now in Omaha. But I just don't see the reason to release people. Right? 143 games to go. I'd like to maintain inventory. I'd like to maintain people that have produced at the big league level. So to jettison Adam Frazier, to me, doesn't make the most sense, especially if Massey comes back and then, oh, the back just got tight again. Then what are you doing? So appreciate you listening. 913-586-7610. Dan and KCK's got some love for Michael Wacha. How can you not? That six-pitch battle he had with Paul DeJong to finish off that fourth inning, man, that was some – I was juiced. I was juiced watching Michael Wacha. I go back to a conversation I had with Adam Frazier during spring training when he was talking about this rotation and the power and Cy Young ability of Cole Reagans and Brady Singer. And then he talked about Michael Wacha and Seth Lugo and kept using the word artist. Those guys are artists. It's artistry when they're on the hill. That's what that was from Michael Wacha in the fourth inning. If you missed it, Royals, White Sox scoreless. This is game two of this traditional doubleheader. Scoreless in the bottom of the fourth inning, and Andrew Vaughn doubles down the left field line. With one out, Eloy Jimenez draws a walk, so you have first and second with one out, and Dominic Fletcher then goes to right field, plating the White Sox first run. Jimenez goes to third, and the White Sox are threatening in the fourth. They're up 1-0, runners on the corners, and only one out. Michael Wacha then gets Sosa to swing through a changeup out of the zone for a strikeout and the second out of the inning, and then a six-pitch battle with Paul DeJong, who, by the way, just hits bullets, apparently. DeJong, prior to that at-bat against Wacha in the fourth inning, had reached base in each of his previous five trips to the dish. Yeah, in game one, DeJong went two-run home run, walk against Brady Singer, leadoff single against Nick Anderson, two-out double against James MacArthur. And then in game two, he hits a leadoff single against Michael Wacha in the third, comes back up in the fourth with two on and two outs, and punches out. And watching Wacha up, down, out, in, changeup, fastball, keeping these guys off balance. It was an entertaining watch, as it always is with this Royals rotation. Wacha would give up his second run in his final inning. A leadoff home run to Gavin Sheets, a first pitch get me over fastball that was on a platter. Sheets didn't miss it, belted over the right field wall for a solo bomb. That made it 2-0 Chicago. Royals would get on the board in the top half of the seventh inning. Nick Lofton scoring on a ground out off of the bat of Hunter Renfro. Royals drop game two of the doubleheader. They fall 2-1, but they won the opener behind Brady Singer, John Schreiber, James MacArthur, and some big swings from Salvador Perez and Hunter Renfro. Let's go to Big T and Shawnee. You're next up on 610 Sports Radio. Go ahead.
Hey, Vern, appreciate it. Thanks for taking my call. And, Vern, I just got to take my hat off. You mentioned it, how Salvi comes back with a vengeance, how the woolly veteran just keeps doing it and doing it. And the guy is just unreal. He's just unreal. He's a badass mofo, everybody.
Okay.
Salvi is the captain of the team. You saw what he did. You thought he was going to be hurt. And we're like, uh-oh, this ain't good. Yep. If we lose Salvi for any period, this is not going to be good. But way to call it, Vern. Way to calm the waters and say, hey, watch Salvi do what he does. There's a Grand Funk Railroad song, and he's your captain. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody, listen to me. Mm-hmm. Watch our captain guide our ship. And let's just keep it rolling. The pitching staff, you said it, Vern, 12 out of 19. Are you kidding me? That's just awesome. The bullpen. Hunter Renfro, keep it up. Nick Lofton, I'm rooting for you too, buddy. If they send you down, keep your head up. We're going to need you. And as always, let's go Royals. We won this series.
Phone lines open for you, 913-586-7610. Royals, cap a 500 road trip. That's what I wanted going into it. I know. I heard what Denny said. Denny said it'll be a disappointment if you don't sweep the White Sox. I'm not going to argue with the Hall of Famer, but I'm not going to change my expectation. Give me a 500 road trip and I'm happy. The Royals did just that. Salvi's healthy. The rotation remains healthy. The rotation's given you a chance to win every single game. So long as that continues, guys, I'm not going to sweat the occasional one-run loss, two-run loss, back-to-back losses. Until the starting pitching becomes an issue or the reason why you're losing, I'm not sweating slumping bats. Every year, there are multiple slumping bats at every moment on every team. I'm not sweating it. If the pitching, defense, and base running remain supreme, this team's going to run away with the division. That's not sports radio hyperbole. That's not some hot take from some blowhard on the radio. If they maintain the second-best ERA in baseball as a starting unit, maintain the best defensive unit, the best base-running unit, if that stuff continues, they're winning the division. Despite a slumping bat or two or three. Phone lines are open, 913-586-7610. That's our text line number as well, 913-586-7610. We'll take a quick timeout, get back to your thoughts, and head inside that Royals clubhouse after this.
You're listening to Burns Post Game Show on your home for Royals baseball, 610 Sports Radio, and the Odyssey app.
Here's the 2-2. And Renfro swings, and he blasts one to deep left. Way back and gone.
Ryan Lefebvre on the call. Hunter Renfro with the bomb. Renfro's second big fly with the boys in blue. It came in the ninth inning of game one of today's traditional doubleheader. Renfro's two-out blast in the ninth put the Royals up 4-2. That would be the final score as they won game one. They take the series from the White Sox with that win, but they're unable to sweep Chicago in their house, falling in the finale 2-1 as they just couldn't get that big hit. Had an opportunity in the first, 2-on and 2-out. MJ Melendez flies out to left. Great play by Robbie Grossman ranging to the line. Bobby reached with two outs in the third, but Vinny rolled over one to the right side. You know, the inning that stings is the sixth inning. Garrett Hampson with a leadoff infield single. Bobby Witt Jr. then hits a rocket right at Shoemake, the Chicago shortstop, and he starts a 6-4-3 double play. But then, as that sixth inning progressed, Vinny doubled, Salvi walked, and you had two on and two outs once again for MJ. Pedro Grafal went to the bullpen, brought in Tanner Banks, and he got MJ to swing through a curveball. Royals manufacture a run in the seventh with some aid from the White Sox pitcher. Tanner Banks makes an error, tried to pick off Nick Lofton at second base. Lofton advances to third and scores on Hunter Renfro's ground ball. I mentioned the eighth inning. We talked about that at the beginning of the show. Royals down 2-1. Another opportunity as Vinny Pasquantino draws a two-out walk. Dairon Blanco comes in off the bench but is caught stealing. Taking the bat out of Salvi's hands, not allowing the captain to hopefully drive him in from second. So the Royals drop game two, but like I've mentioned, man, I'm going to have a real tough time being irate. I'm going to have a real tough time being disappointed with 500 road trips and the best pitching staff or one of the three best pitching staffs in Major League Baseball. I know you have slumping bats. It's going to happen. Hunter Renfro, by the way, has now driven in a run in five of his last eight starts. We'll see if he's in there coming up on Friday. I mentioned I still had two tickets to Friday's game, Royals-Orioles. It's a 6:40 first pitch. I'm hoping it's a packed crowd. If you want to be there, let's say the 12th caller. Okay, Royals have 12 wins. They're now 12-7, second place in the American League Central. Third best record in the American League. Yeah, let's say 12th caller right now to 913-586-7610. That's 913-586-7610. 12th caller, the tickets are yours. We'll see you out at the K. Let's go back to the text line, 913-586-7610. Phone lines are open as well. 913-586-7610. From the 816, Vern, I'm disappointed in the split. Good teams win both. I disagree with that. And you can say that, but I believe you're wrong. They won the series. Good teams win series. Good teams go 500 on the road. You can't say good teams sweep doubleheaders on a consistent... No. And what are you disappointed by in Game 2? Angry at Dairon Blanco? Get real. Guy's been perfect this year. You want to go in on Bobby Witt Jr. for that sixth inning double play? Come on. MJ? Okay, well, MJ won you like three games in a row in the season's first 2 weeks. So I think he's earned some patience. Text line 913-586-7610. From the 913, Vern, one thing that does concern me is center field. I know Isbell can play a quality center field, but when the Royals have won dynamic, when they've won championships, they had dynamic players in center field. Okay, Willie Wilson, Lorenzo Cain, appreciate it. And you're right, no doubt, Lorenzo Cain was an MVP candidate in 2015. You dive into Willie Wilson's baseball reference page, it's wild. Stolen base numbers, the length of his career, terrific career. But that 2015 team had a Kyle Isbell. The 1985 team had a Kyle Isbell. Those teams had positions where you punted on offense and said, all we need you to do is play well above average defense and execute occasionally at the dish. Do the little things at the plate. Look at the shortstop position, both in 1985 and in 2015. I know Alcides Escobar turned it on in the postseason, and the Royals had a terrific record with him in the leadoff spot, but he wasn't a good hitter. Now, Concepcion in 1985 wasn't a good hitter. Every team would love nine league average to better hitters in their lineup. It'd be great. But it's very difficult to build that team. Not, you know, even the Dodgers don't have that team. You're going to punt in a specific area, normally up the middle, catcher, second, short, or center. 85 and 15, it was shorts. 24, whatever this season turns into, right now it's center field. So while you're right, the Royals have normally had a dynamic five-tool center fielder, they've never had a shortstop like this. Not many teams in baseball history have had a shortstop like this. All right, we have our winner, Kyle in Kansas City. You'll be going to Kauffman Stadium coming up Friday night to see the Royals and the Baltimore Orioles. Thanks for listening. Let's go a few more from the text line. Why not? Lori in Austin is happy with a 500 road trip. She says it's the best could have hoped for. Our buddy, yeah, Raj in the Ozarks, writing in, worried about MJ and Michael. Understand? Yeah, if you were listening to Fesco in the Morning, great conversation with the manager, Matt Quatrero. They asked him about Patrick Mahomes' interview in Time Magazine where he hints that, you know, I wouldn't mind a little spring training action. I wouldn't mind hosting Saturday Night Live. Yeah, if you missed it, check out the entire interview on the Odyssey app. Fesco in the Morning, they have Q on every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Yeah, but if you missed it, here's what Matt Quatrero had to say to Bob and Josh.
Patrick Mahomes is on the cover of Time Magazine as one of the 100 influential people of the year. He said he'd like to play for the Royals at some point, maybe get an invite to spring training. Are you prepared to invite Patrick Mahomes to spring training?
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Yes, certainly. I mean, he owns part of the team, so I think he can invite himself.
Can I come take some swings in the cage?
You don't own part of the team.
Let's not push it.
All right.
Hear that entire interview again on the Odyssey app. Wherever you get your podcast, just search Fesco in the Morning. Back to the text line from the 913. Vern, I believe in the team that we have. And I think the younger players have advanced and learned, no doubt about it. But if we were to make a World Series or a playoff run, do you think we need to bring in a bat or a reliever? Thanks for listening. I got to be honest with you. This is now, what, 12 years I've been doing this? It's been a long time since they've been good. But I don't remember in 2013, 14, 15, 16, 17. I don't remember the desire to trade or acquire players being as quick arriving as they have been this season. There's 19 games in, and I swear I've received this question on more than half of the shows. What do we need? What do we need to add? Right now, nothing. Nothing, because I don't know who you want to get rid of. I hope they don't need to bring in a bat. I hope they don't need to bring in a reliever. Over the course of 162, you would think that someone's going to go down, and that will be my answer. But until someone goes down, this has been my response more times than not. But until someone goes down with an injury, I'm not looking to move anything. Now, Michael Massey's going to come back. Nick Lofton, I think, is going to be on his way out. Okay? But other than that, you can always use better pitchers. So a better pitcher, I guess that's my answer, a reliever. You can never have enough pitching. Your pitching staff is never perfect. You can always improve somewhere. But the thing is with this team right now, Jordan Lyles, Will Smith, Chris Stratton, Nick Anderson, these guys are either on the team or you pay them to go away. It's not like they go to the minor leagues. They've been around too long. They've earned it. Like Union has negotiated that they've earned, you can't send me to AAA without my approval or sending me through waivers and giving me another opportunity with a big league team elsewhere. Matt Sauer, you can't send him anywhere or else you send him back to the New York Yankees. You don't want John Schreiber or James MacArthur to go anywhere because they're dealing. They're your two most fearless relievers. Angel Zerpa had another scoreless outing. Now he needed a hand from Chris Stratton, but a scoreless outing nonetheless. Royals pitching, solid in game two. Again, you lost 2-1. You had a chance. Michael Wacha, Angel Zerpa, Chris Stratton combined for that two runs of six-hit baseball. Zerpa gave up a pair of knocks. Stratton gave up a pair of walks, but neither one of them allow a single run. A few more from the text line, 913-586-7610, as the Royals split a traditional doubleheader with the White Sox, winning game one 4-2, but dropping the finale 2-1. Katie in North Carolina. Vern, 8 months ago, I was praying that the Royals don't have the worst record in baseball. Tonight, I'm disappointed they don't have the best record in baseball. Way to turn it around, boys. Let's go Royals. Signed, Katie in North Carolina. No doubt. From the 816, Vern, as long as the Royals keep winning and covering the spread, I keep making money. I've tripled my money on the Royals today alone. Good for you. Hey, I hope you guys were listening to the On Deck show today. I hope you heard that double play. We've been doing the double play now for, 2 years, 3 years? That was by far the most successful double play in the history of the On Deck show. I told you Salvi was going to hit a home run, plus 265. Told you Brady Singer was going to have the first strikeout of the game, plus 195. Drew Nixon gave you a three-leg parlay that hit, plus 226. And Cody Tapp told you that Hunter Renfro was going to come through with an extra base hit, plus 135. Every day, we bring you the double play on the On Deck show. Every day, we give you a chance to win Royals tickets on the On Deck show. In fact, starting Friday, we'll give you the option of seeing the Herrera game, the Davis game, or the Holland game coming up in May when they give away those bobbleheads Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and the corresponding pitcher throws out the first pitch. Yeah, Herrera, Davis, Holland, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, your chance to win those tickets Friday on the On Deck Show as we get started at 5:30. A couple more from the text line, 913-586-7610. From the 816, Vernon, game two, do you think when Bobby came to the plate that he should have bunted the runner over? You're talking about the sixth inning. Garrett Hampson, leadoff infield single. Bobby comes to the dish as the Royals, at that point, find themselves in a 1-0 hole. Would I have bunted Bobby Witt Jr.? No. No, I'll probably never ask. Not never. Can't say never. Was he bunted last year? I guess a suicide squeeze or a safety squeeze. Not there, though. No, no. Certainly not in the sixth inning. Vinny hitting behind him. No, I'm rarely going to ask Bobby Witt Jr. to lay down a bunt. Not against the White Sox, not in the sixth inning, not when I think that Bobby's going to get another AB. Not when I think Vinny and Salvi are going to get another two at-bats. One-run game, no, they can change that with one swing. I like you thinking along with the game, though. Way to go. Appreciate it. Mike and Lee Summit points out that the last two losses are each by one run. Says, I'll take it. Yeah, me too. Pletch writes in, Hunter Renfroe looking to be back to form. How nice would it be to have Will Smith start dealing again? Vern, we went 3-3 on a road trip. You're not going to hear me complaining. Me neither, Pletch. Yeah, Will Smith got into game one. Smith threw a 1-2-3 9-pitch sixth inning, striking Gavin Sheets out with a slider diving away. Got Eloy Jimenez to line out to center field and Andrew Benintendi to line out to the opposite field. Yeah, nice to see that from Will Smith. Velocity still 89, maybe hit 91. Velocity still not there. And one more from the text line. This from the 913, just someone hating on Hunter Renfroe. Look, if the eight hitter in your lineup is the culprit, and I don't know what he's the culprit of, or if he's the focus of your ire, the nine hitter who's playing a pretty solid defensive right field and again has an RBI in five of his last eight starts, I think things are going pretty well. And we know that things are going pretty well because the Royals are 12-7, have the third best record in the American League, have the best pitching staff in the American League, with all due respect to the Seattle Mariners. Now, you need to be doing okay as a Royals fan. So long as these starting pitchers stay healthy, you're not going to hear me complaining. So long as these starting pitchers maintain this 100% clip of giving the team a chance to win, no, you're not going to hear me complaining. Not after what I've been through. We'll see what Alec Marsh has in store. Alec Marsh on the Hill coming up on Friday as he squares off with Dean Kramer. Second time seeing Dean Kramer, but again, it's the Orioles' second time seeing Alec Marsh. He shoved in Baltimore a few weeks ago. Got to be 20,000 there Friday, right? Got to be 20 grand. I hope you're one of them. I hope to see you out there. Thanks to Grant Nicholson for the help back at the studio. Thanks to you for listening. Royal Split, a traditional doubleheader in Chicago. Enjoy the off day. I'll talk to you on Friday. Appreciate you listening. Take care.
You've been listening to Vern's postgame show.
Blast down the right field line. Hooking. Stay fair. Stay fair.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.